We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome to the RotoWire Prospect Podcast, presented by FanDuel. Clay Link here with lead prospect writer James Anderson. Thank you to New Day, N-E-U-D-A-E, at New Day Music on Twitter. We appreciate the song Lion Kings, the intro that you heard to this podcast. And James, you wrote two articles last week. Don't have a new one up on the site, so this week we're just going to kind of bounce around the league, bounce around Major League Baseball and check in on how some of these young guys are doing before minor league games get underway, what, this weekend?
Yeah, a lot of them are starting today. Oh, nice. And it's exciting. But, yeah, I didn't do an article this week because there's just really nothing to write about. I mean, I've talked so much about all these guys all off season. It's just kind of, let's go. Let's get this thing cracking. And once they're kind of in the big leagues, I sort of, you know, it's kind of like sending the kids off to college. Like, I'm kind of like, I'm aware of what's going on, but it's not really stuff that I'm sort of honed in on. Like, I'm more interested in what's going on in the minor leagues. We got plenty of great people covering what's going on in the big leagues. So, yeah, just kind of good opportunity to sort of take the temperature of who's doing what so far.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, like, it's a 1 week where you can kind of put your feet up, but I know that's not what you do here at work. I mean, you still got a ton on your plate, but good to maybe just breathe for a week before minor league games do get underway. A ton of off-season prep you put in, getting everybody up to speed on the top prospects in the game. A lot of maintenance with that overall top 400. But again, we're going to be focusing on major league players. Some of these guys are still technically prospects because they haven't reached the thresholds to technically graduate just yet. But let's start with Joey Lucchesi. And when I say his name, I always hear future in my head. Like, I don't do nothing to Case. But anyway, he didn't look very good against the Brewers in his debut. I didn't think. I mean, after the first inning, he looked okay. But today, seven Ks, five really clean innings, sounds like quite a few swings and misses. We know about the funky delivery, hides the ball pretty well. But how sustainable is his success, do you think, at the big league level?
I think if you bet against a guy like this, you're going to be right more often than not. So it's certainly easy to just sort of fade someone like Lucchesi. You know, minimal experience above high A. He was pretty old. I think he's like 24 right now. So it's not like he's been rushed relative to his age, but just not a guy that's got a ton of innings under his belt in the upper levels. None of the secondary pitches project to be plus offerings. It's definitely a left-handed deception command control type of package. And sometimes guys like that can outshoot our projections on them just because it's sort of hard to put a grade on deception or a grade on just kind of confusing batters. And he definitely is capable of doing that on any given start from here on out. I mean, whenever a player faces a guy like this for the first time, especially left-handed hitters, it's very possible that they struggle. But I would not go out there and start blowing your fab on him or rushing to add him in like a really shallow league. He's obviously probably already owned in your deeper formats, but he's not a guy that I think is going to be all that useful in 15 team mix leagues over the course of the season. If you pick your spots, there's going to be times where it's going to work out, but I still would expect the ERA to be over four, whip probably over 1.3, if I'm being honest, and definitely not a strikeout per inning.
Yeah, I think those are very fair. I mean, decent, you know, in today's game in those 15 teamers, those kind of ratios will play. Yeah. But we haven't seen him outside of outside of San Diego yet, and he does go to Colorado next. So yeah, that's definitely a spot that you want to avoid. I did shell out 12 in our 18 team stake league, so I feel like you were subtweeting me there a little bit when you said you shouldn't shell out the fab money. But hey.
Hey, no, I mean that's a format where he absolutely should have been owned. I'd love to know what the second highest bid was on him that week. Yeah. Because I just don't think anyone was really breaking the bank. I shelled out 7 for Seth Lugo, and he's not even in the rotation, so I can't really talk. But
he looks awesome, though. It's a multi-inning reliever that could really pay off.
I mean, if you get to eat a free steak every year for just rostering a few nice multi-inning relievers, I'd be an eater every year.
Yeah, we'll see. I thought with Lucchesi, I just needed somebody to plug in. It was like a 2-star week because our lineup periods go Friday through Thursday in that league. And I lost Puck, you know, had Sandy Alcantara. Just needed to shake things up a little bit. You got Fab running. Yeah, shake it up. I got Fab running again tonight. Got some pretty lofty bids out there.
Oh, boy.
Getting a little aggressive. We'll see now. I need some pitching, that's for sure. I'm excited to get Eduardo Rodriguez back. Sounds like he may pitch this weekend, but I still need another arm or two, so looking to fill those gaps. Let's talk about another arm who's on the bump today, Yanni Chirinos. Kind of a bullpen game, but he actually made the most of his limited pitch count. I think he went 5 innings on like 60-some pitches. Pretty impressive effort against the Red Sox, no less, in Boston. Seems like they are pretty committed to this format and rotation, but even if it is technically these bullpen games that Chirinos is starting, he could be pretty useful.
Yeah, my buddy Josh Katzenstein, who's in the RotoWire Dynasty Invitational, was asking what I thought of Chirinos before this start. He went out and added him, and he was like, he comes back to me after the start. He's like, hey, Johnny Chirinos. I was like, yeah, nice. Well, I mean, how are you going to predict that a guy throws 54 pitches and gets through 5 innings?
Like, there's only 54.
Yeah. He's a weird pitcher where if I'm his fantasy owner, I think I want them pulling him after the second time through the order. Like a lot of times you want your starter to get as many innings as possible, like get him a better chance to qualify for the win and stuff. But I think the Rays know what they're doing with this piggyback rotation plan. I mean, a guy like Chirinos can be successful. Lots of guys can be successful turning over a big league lineup a couple times. It's that third time through that kind of makes or breaks whether you're a legitimate starter. And you know, if you're not, you can still usually get three or four innings, and Chirinos is probably going to be able to do that. So I think if you kind of treat him as sort of a Chad Green, Josh Hader type of guy who technically is getting starts, but is not someone who in your plan is really going to be contributing wins. Like, I think if you get 5 or 6 wins from Chirinos on the season, that should be considered a pretty good return on your investment. I think he's more of a ratios strikeouts play, because you know that he's probably not going to have too many true blow up outings, just by the nature of the way they're going to use him. A guy that I didn't have ranked inside my top 400 coming into the year, just because I didn't think he was going to be a starting pitcher. I did not foresee this sort of plan of attack the Rays are using with him being a sustainable thing, but it very well may be. So I moved him in. He's in the 200 to 300 range now, just because he's a guy that's going to be added now in a lot of 15-team leagues, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, I was looking at our three leagues that run Fab tonight, and I think he's owned in every one of them. I was lucky enough to get him in labor, and just having a guy like that to anchor ratios is big, and in those deeper leagues for sure. And I saw Brent Honeywell tweeting about how he's like a major league guy. Like, he's just a really good person. Sounds like the makeup is what you want too. There was Yanni Chirinos. And yeah, with the bullpen usage there in Tampa Bay, I do think that's the wave of the future. And we've already seen that trend developing with more innings out of the bullpen, relying less on your starters to get you through that order three times. I do think Gabe Kapler is going a little overboard, though. He's overthinking it a little bit.
So yeah.
I pulled Nick Pivetta today. Wouldn't let him get through 6, even though he'd struck out 9 and allowed like 4 hits.
I didn't know that he pitched that well. I think I have him going.
Yeah, he pitched really well.
Got him going somewhere. So that's good to see. I mean,
you're a big Pivetta guy.
Well, look, is. definitely don't want.
I'm kidding. You're not.
Definitely don't misconstrue that. I have him some places, but definitely don't want to be labeled as a big Pivetta guy. I mean, I don't know. I think today it's fine. You know, you get 5 2/3 out of him. I mean, that they haven't blown the game yet.
Just let him get through 6. It's one more out. I don't know. I guess he got booed.
He's at 97 crazy pitches.
All right.
I don't know.
I guess he got booed like crazy. That's definitely less.
It's less
ridiculous
than like the Aaron Nola one.
That's so stupid.
Yeah, I think more of the stuff that Gabe Kapler's trying is going to end up looking smart than stupid at the end of the year, but he's obviously going to make some mistakes, and I just hope everyone's just a little bit more patient with him. I mean, it's a long season.
I agree with you generally. I will say that that him trying to bring in a bullpen or bring in a reliever who was not warmed up was just inexcusable. I've never seen anything like
that. That's like pure incompetence, yeah. Right? I mean, you're
it's crazy too. I was watching that, and like his stroll to the mound was just so confident. And then like he just has the ball, just kind of standing there. Then he just looks out at the bullpen, and then it cuts to commercial. It was
it's
really
like
weird.
Really getting caught with your pants down.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you think of the Scott Kingery usage so far? He started at his fourth different position today, up in the 3-hole.
Yeah, I saw that he was up in the 3-hole and in right field.
Yeah, so now he's started in, actually, I don't think he started in left field. I think he moved to left field one game, but he's started at shortstop, third base, and right field. He's played left field. So I mean, it's really kind of working out perfectly from a fantasy standpoint, because you already have the second base eligibility, and I think we're on track for him probably to gain eligibility at third base, probably at shortstop as well, and the outfield, all probably by the All-Star break. I think that his playing time is going to be spread out that much, unless Michael Franco just completely goes into the tank and he just starts playing every day at third base or something. But that's really encouraging, because having flexibility with a guy like that, especially at those positions, like sometimes you'll get a guy with first base outfield eligibility or something like that, and it's not super valuable, or you'll get like Austin Barnes qualifying at second base. Like, that's not super valuable, but a guy that can qualify at second base, shortstop, and third base, like, that's what makes someone like Yoenis Solarte or Marwin Gonzalez so intriguing. And I think that that's probably what's going to happen with Kingery this season.
Yeah, I think that's really well put. A guy like this who can hit and steal some bags, hit for some power that you can move around is super valuable. I do. Well, I know he's been playing for the most part this season, you know, starting, but I do think, you know, this is a guy that you just shouldn't have on your bench. And I know Chris List was making the point on the XM show the other day, just generally and throughout the league, not just with the Phillies, but a lot of like rest days for these really talented young players when there should be, you know, if your best player is healthy, you play him for 155 games.
You know, yes and no. I think this is a trend in general that I think is going to kind of skew further and further away from what Liss wants there. I think that, you know, it's something that in the NBA has been a thing over the past like 4 or 5 years where teams have really stressed strategic rest days for even their best players. And, you know, I know a lot of old school people will just be like, what, you guys can't play a game like every single day? Like what, like what's going on here? But, I definitely buy that getting a day off each week, even if you're a really good player, probably is good for you long term. And I mean, they're in way better shape than I am, but you know, you, when you exert yourself in like a physical activity one day, you're a little, you're a little tired the next day. Like
I said that to you before we recorded. We played hoops last night and I'm sore as hell.
Yeah. So I think it's
similar.
It's not the end of the world if you sit a guy like Kingery or whoever once a week or once every 2 weeks. And I don't think it's going to spiral out of control to where everyone's just sitting like every other day or anything like that. But I do think that this is going to be a trend where you're kind of just hoping for 5 games each week from a fantasy perspective. If you get 5 starts from an offensive player you plugged in, unless they're just somebody that's known for playing every day, I think you should be happy with that. So yeah, just because Kingery's not going to play every single day doesn't mean you should start an inferior option who might play every day.
Yeah, you make a lot of really good points. It is a crazy long grind of a season, and it's impossible for me to put myself in their shoes and say, oh, they should be out there for 155 games. Just from a fantasy standpoint, you know, it is a selfish desire to have these guys out there. But for in Kingery's case, especially with these early off days in the season, makes him kind of a tough guy to deploy, like in the half weeks in the NFBC.
Yeah, but you know, I already got myself in trouble by, I didn't really get myself in trouble. Like, Kingery still hasn't stolen a base, or
he did today,
or did he? He stole one today. All right,
I had him on my bench in the main event.
I started
main event but online champion.
Well, when they let us in, you'll put him on your bench in the main event. I think I started my boy Jed Lowry over him in that TGFBI maybe, or maybe it was my online championship or something like that. But yeah, I mean, you really just got to kind of go with your studs. I mean, if you believe that Kingery is going to get, you know, 15 to 20 home runs, 20 plus steals, just don't mess around with it. You know, you're not going to get all those if you bench him every now and then. Like, if you want to get all his steals, then you should just leave him in there.
Yeah, that's I'm going to have to make that switch. I had him and Belt on my bench.
Nice.
Belt had a heck of a game yesterday. I hate when you make unforced errors this early in the season, you know? It's just, it's a bad look. But, you know, so many leagues that it's bound to happen. But when you're already kicking yourself 1 week into the season for certain decisions, it's painful.
Better to like accidentally sit a guy who has a good week and play someone that is healthy and maybe doesn't have as good of a week than to like miss on a fab period or something like that.
Yeah, or like cut a guy who's had a slow week. Yeah, I'm with you there. Missing a fab period, I've learned, is, you know, any one of the 26 fab periods is just a big no-no. You just got to give yourself the best chance to win by at least getting in and keeping guys honest with certain bids. But let's talk about another. I mean, we talked about Kingery, but we also talked about some lower level guys. One more guy who wasn't a big prospect by any means, but 3-homer game this week out of nowhere, Christian Villanueva for the Padres, now batting 5th in that order for them, bumping Carlos Asuaje down. I thought he might be an anchor there in the heart of the order, but Villanueva, I would imagine that three-homer game is kind of giving them the edge at third. I know Spangenberg can move around a little bit. But how much are you buying in on this guy? I mean, we saw last year that, you know, if you waited and waited for more proof on guys like Justin Smoke and some other big boppers, you missed out. So is it a time where you'd recommend jumping in and trying to get Villanueva?
I think you have to jump in and get him in deeper leagues. He's rocking the awesome 300 average, zero BABIP right now because all of his hits have gone over the fence. So hasn't been anything
that's
in play.
It's a baller move. I like that.
I mean, so 15-team league. Let's just start there. I think in like our stake league, deeper leagues like that, NL onlys, he's obviously should be owned. What about a 15-team mixer with, let's say it's TGFBI and you have five bench spots?
So I'm filling in for Jan Levine on NL Fab this weekend. I started working on that today, and Villanueva was the first guy I threw in the document, and I didn't settle on a price yet, but I'm thinking 15-team leagues. I mean, three-homer games, yeah. I mean, Matt Davidson had one. Really not investing much in him, but...
Would you rather have Villanueva than Matt Davidson in a 15-team league?
Probably, just because I haven't seen Villanueva struggle.
You haven't seen the amount of suck that yeah. Matt Davidson's displayed.
The pure suck. The batting average suck. The play discipline with Davidson last year was atrocious. Maybe if there were changes there, something, you know, reasonable, 30 homers with like a 240 average could be within reach. But I think Villanueva, I just haven't seen him struggle so much. So I think I'd take him. And if that's the case, maybe I'd say up to 10% of your budget in a 15-team league. Think that's fair? Might not be enough to land him, but
10%, man, that's a lot. I was thinking like, you know, maybe throw out like a, if it's like $1,000 of, okay, so say it's $100 worth of Fab. I was thinking maybe you could throw out like $3 or $4 for him. The question is, it's like in a 15-team league, if you really need a guy like Villanueva, that just tells me you had a crappy draft and like you shouldn't.
You've had some injuries. Maybe you drafted Justin Turner or somebody.
Sure. Yeah. I guess I'm not going to end up with him. I don't think anywhere. I might throw a buck or two at him in TGFBI or something like that. I'm not going to bid on him in like the NFBC online championship, which is a 12-team league.
No, I just neither.
I don't think he belongs rostered in a format like that. I think in 15 teamers, you make a really good point though. Like the, I need more proof type of fantasy managing is just going to result in you missing on all those guys.
Yeah, every one of them.
And so it wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world if Christian Villanueva went out and hit 25 homers this year with like a 270 average. Like that's something that could happen. I don't think it's going to happen. I think
in this juice ball era, it's not out of the question. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think that if you're just going based on what he did at AAA last year, that was a 25-year-old in the PCL. So just be careful if you're overreacting to just, well, he was awesome at AAA last year. It's like, yeah, I mean, he probably should have been awesome. So I'm probably fading
excuse me
a batting average over 250. I think that he's going to probably settle more in that sort of 235, 240 range. And then it's just a question of whether it's 15 homers or 25 homers. I mean, if it's 25 homers and like a 245 average, that'll play in a 15-team league.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's just a philosophical thing too. I'm willing to open up the wallet a little bit more, not go too crazy, but a little bit more at this portion of the season, because I think obviously the players you get now will have the greatest impact on your team with so much time remaining, and there just may not be as good of buying opportunities down the road.
I think it has to bank on that. It definitely has to depend on who you're dropping though too, because yeah. Like you don't, if somebody that you liked 2 weeks ago has like one or two hits at this point in the season, I mean, I don't think you should be willing to cut bait for a guy like Villanueva necessarily just because he's had the hotter start to the year. Like, you might end up dropping someone for Villanueva just because of this hot start, who ends up having a significantly better rest of the season, because you're not getting those three home runs. Like, you're getting what he does from now on. And if you have a guy that's struggling that you believed in before the season, then his best baseball is probably ahead of him.
Yeah, and that is a really good point, just about keep an eye on the drops in your league.
Oh, yeah.
Going through the stake league drops really opened my eyes.
You definitely, like,
in 6 to midnight.
In April and May, I'm always just really combing through the drops, because that's where guys like Rich Hill got dropped a couple years ago in our stake league because he had like a rough couple starts. Like, good players like Zach Davies, Jimmy Nelson got dropped. Both of those guys got dropped last year.
Cody Bellinger.
Yeah, Cody Bellinger. Like, a lot of studs get dropped early because people are so anxious. Like, it almost feels bad if you're sitting there not acting. Mm-hmm. And so you just want to feel like you're doing something to make your team better. So you see a guy out there, you want to go get him, and you're like, well, I guess I'll drop this guy. And you got to be careful.
Yeah. Time for some more prospect stashing. We'll see how that plays out tonight. But a quick note, what's better than fantasy sports? The future of fantasy sports. The Fantasy Gold Team is bringing you just that. Welcome to DraftDaily.com. It's crypto, it's currency, it's sports. DraftDaily.com is the new standard in the fantasy sports industry, with almost non-existent fees, 100% trackable transactions, and 0% risk of chargebacks. We are taking the industry by storm, making the game we all love both safer and cheaper to play. We have brought fantasy sports and blockchain technology together to create the ultimate user experience and platform, DraftDaily.com. On DraftDaily.com, our users can play without worry and without fees, digging into their profits. DraftDaily.com, introducing cryptocurrency to the masses. What better way to do that than to merge crypto with fantasy sports? On DraftDaily.com, you play with and win cryptocurrency. Secure your place in history. Play on DraftDaily.com today, where players in the game they love are the focus. DraftDaily.com. Let's talk about Shohei Ohtani, James. What a turnaround in terms of public perception with him since the end of spring training. I got laughed at for buying him in tout head-to-head at like $17. Well, how do you like me now? I don't get any of those hitting stats. I did have two homers, including that one off Kluber. Ohtani-san, I'm really loving watching this kid. I mean, he's already one of my favorite guys to watch when he's on. I'll jump on the MLB TV and change it when I see he's up to bat, and looking forward to seeing what he does in his second start. But let's focus primarily right now on the pitching. What did you see from him and his repertoire in his first start?
He's just beyond nasty. I mean, it's just, I'm trying to, like, which pitchers do you think have comparable stuff to him in the big leagues? Like Syndergaard.
Jeez, yeah, I guess.
I mean, Scherzer's still pretty nasty. Sales is obviously nasty.
It's kind of like Garrett Cole a little bit.
It's almost like all of his pitches just have a little extra movement than should be legal. Like, it's just, wow, how did that pitch do that? Like, I've never seen a guy.
That sinker?
Ugh. So disgusting.
Really nice.
That slider is just disgusting. Yeah. I mean, if you ended up with Ohtani in a keeper league, dynasty league, you should be very happy. You should be able to breathe a sigh of relief. I know that there were probably some times during spring training where you were second guessing yourself, but he's going to be really, really special. It looks like he's going to be special on the mound and at the plate. Mm. But yeah, I think you're right to focus this on the mound. This is going to be like an all-time just sort of bitterness of fantasy owners not being able to get credit for his home runs all season, because you're never – do you see it getting to the point where you would deploy him as a hitter over a pitcher in CBS?
Maybe if he has like a really tough matchup. But yeah. Even then, like if it's just like a road matchup somewhere bad.
Like, I mean, say what if he's facing the Astros on one start?
Huh. That's a good question.
And it's a seven game week, so you might be able to get.
So I might get two starts?
No, so you might get like four DH starts or something like
okay.
that.
Okay. Man, just the fact that we haven't a regular season, he was so good. Right now, I'd probably just want to keep him on the pitching side because I think those wins, the Ks, are probably more valuable.
I think so.
Right now, just given everybody's producing offensively, but...
It's just more scary. Like what he does on the mound is tougher to get. Like you can, there are plenty of guys that went outside the top 100 that probably should be able to best his hitting production this season. But like what he does on the mound is just so unique. But it is going to be tough, like owning him and just seeing all these home runs and just not being able to get anything for it. But that's the way it goes. I'm just the one thing with him the whole time has just been how many innings is he going to throw this year? And I don't think I definitely didn't have reservations in terms of the per start production. I still think it's going to be iffy as to whether he goes over 160 innings this year. And that'll probably determine whether he was a solid buy in most drafts. There was that period towards the end of spring training where you could get him at a discount to where all you really need is 140, 150 innings for it to be well worth it. But I think in most leagues, the price that it took to get him, you're going to need 160 plus innings.
Yeah. I just to touch on the hitting side real quick before we move on, I did see like some side-by-side videos of his swing now versus spring training. It does seem like he quieted that that kind of wind-up, kind of eliminated the full leg kick and just kind of went with a kind of shorter toe tap type of mechanism, seemed to be working well. Kluber tried to sneak that fastball in and he turned it around. Had a pretty nice little bat flip too. Recommend checking out that call in Japanese if you get a chance. They have it on the MLB At Bat app. Pretty damn cool. But let's talk about Jesse Winker. Not a great start for roto purposes, but he is getting on base at a nice clip. Four walks already. See, he's back down in the six hole today against the lefty. This will continue to be the case where he's lower against lefties, maybe on the bench a couple times a week. But thankfully, it does seem Brian Price is on board with leading him off against most right-handers. But where are you at with Winker at this point, just given the uncertainty with the power and the playing time?
I don't really think anything has changed about his value. I think that he's probably playing about as much as could be expected. The leading off against righties thing was something that I think you and I thought was more likely than I think a lot of people, just because of how, not really necessarily Winker, but just because of how bad Billy Hamilton is atop the order, and that Winker seemed like the next best option.
Still no steals for Billy, by the way.
Yeah, that'll sort itself out. The nice thing about Billy is he'll have some game here where he steals three in a game and everyone will forget about it. Mm-hmm. I think it sucks that Winker can't get every day at bats. I think it's, if you're sitting him just for like rest purposes, that'd be one thing, but I think they're sitting him just because of platoon purposes. And to me, he's got the upside as a hitter to where I want to max out. I want to give him a shot to prove he can hit lefties with 100 plate appearances this season. And
yeah, you got to do your best to evaluate him this year.
Yeah, like who gives a crap if Adam Duvall has to sit more than he wants to sit? Like I don't think you should be factoring that in as an organization. Like Adam Duvall is not going to be on the next good Reds team. Jesse Winker will be. Hmm. So you need to be figuring out what he's capable of against lefties.
Completely agree with you there. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with you, but a quick word from our sponsor. All right, James, let's talk about Jack Flaherty, sent down, but really it was a pretty impressive effort against the Brewers. I know there's been some talk that the fastball velocity was actually down a decent amount, but it didn't seem to matter because that breaking ball was well located. A lot of chases on that pitch. Down right now with Wainwright returning. It's stupid, but seniority matters, I guess. in Major League Baseball. So Wainwright's back for now. When do you expect to see Flaherty, and is he worth holding on to in a 15-team league?
I think I'd rather have Flaherty than Lucchesi or Yanni Chirinos.
Yeah, same.
So, I mean, he's kind of that next level up on those guys. Like, those guys are nice sort of filler. You know they're going to be pitching. You're not expecting a ton. But with Flaherty, I think that's a guy I still expect to pitch over 120 innings in the big leagues this year, and I think they're going to be pretty solid innings, and he might even flirt with winning 9 or 10 games. So to me, that gives him the edge over those types of guys. What about if now that he's down, I think it's more fun to just kind of say Jack Flaherty or Walker Buehler.
Ooh, that's a good one. Like both of them. Got my eye on both. in both leagues. But, man, I think I'll go Flaherty just because I think you'll get more innings out of him. I do think you'll get maybe 120, 130 out of Walker Buehler, and maybe the per-game numbers are better, but I think we'd be looking at 150 with Flaherty, even though he's down right now.
Yeah, I might not go quite that high on the innings for either guy, but I do think that's the gap. I think it's about a 20 to 30 inning gap. Which rotation do you think is easier to break into now that Wainwright's back? Is it St. Louis or LA?
That's another one, good one, because Hyunjin Ryu looked atrocious.
Yeah, Hyunjin Ryu looks bad.
10 base runners in 3 2/3.
The Dodgers, everything the Dodgers have done over the past like year suggests that they would be totally fine with Kenta Maeda in the bullpen.
And they're off to a really bad start, too. Really bad. Like, I know that doesn't mean much, but I mean, I think they may need some help sooner than expected.
That's kind of where I was going with this, is I sort of think it's just with Flaherty, it's just going to be a matter of like, when does someone get hurt? Whereas Buehler, I think, could come up without someone getting hurt. Mm-hmm. And just, they might just be like, he's our third best starter. He's our fourth best starter. We got to get him in there. And I think Flaherty, to be fair, is one of the Cardinals' four best starters, but they have egos to manage and stuff. I don't think you have to worry about managing Hyunjin Ryu's ego all that much. I might lean Buehler there just because I think we see him first. And then, you know, whoever picks Flaherty up this week might end up dropping him 2 weeks from now or 3 weeks from now if he's not back up.
Yeah. I would just keep an eye out on your league, because if he is dropped, I think you should pounce on that. I ended up picking up Joe Musgrove in a league last week. And
hey,
thought, hey, we got a good matchup against the Reds. turns out he's hurt again. So that's always fun, though. Like the post. Actually, I think it may have come out before lineup's locked, but I didn't see it until after the game started on Monday. So that was pretty annoying. But let's move on to another prospect here. Miguel Andujar got the call to the Bronx, but batting ninth today behind Tyler Austin, Tyler Wade. We saw the kind of spring Miguel Andujar had, and I was pretty pumped when I heard him get the call up, because I thought, man, he could play quite a bit, be pretty productive in that lineup. But he hasn't really been playing much since getting the call. Now, when he does get the start today, he's stuck in that nine hole in redraft leagues. Is he a guy that you want to pick up right now, or do you maybe want to wait until later in the year when you feel better about the playing time?
I mean, I don't think he should be owned in redraft 15 teamers. And I think in a 17 or 18 team league, I think it's kind of borderline. He should be owned by someone in a 17 or 18 team league. It doesn't necessarily mean he should be owned by you if you've got a good bench. It's really frustrating. Like, I have Andujar and Ryan McMahon, both in our NFBC Arizona first pitch league, and it's just like, can I even like play these guys? Like, they're just not playing enough, or not playing as much as I'd like them to be playing, and it's tough. I think that you could I definitely like McMahon more than Andujar right now for redraft leagues, but yeah, it's not a good situation. The healthier the Yankees get, the less playing time there's going to be for him theoretically. So I think you can cut bait with him in an awful lot of mixed redraft leagues.
Another guy that I have to ask you about, and another guy that's not doing much for my RDI team right now, but Ryan McMahon. And I seriously feel like maybe in light of this McMahon handling early on, that the Rockies have leaped to the top of the dumbest teams chart. I mean, what are they doing?
Were they not there?
I mean, they were there, but I kind of had Seattle up there.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple other teams, the Reds. No, they've been all right. But
I mean, it's sort of that's Baltimore. That's a great. I mean, yeah, the Mets, the Baltimore. Yeah, that's all good options.
Tigers,
plenty to choose from. Yeah, I don't get it, man. I don't know why McMahon's even up if he's going to be playing this much. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd rather him be playing every day in the PCL than getting like one start every 3 or 4 days. And
do you think they do just send him down once the season starts, the minor league season?
They might. I mean, I don't know. It's annoying. You probably have to start him in certain leagues just because he's playing just enough, and they're finally going to Colorado this week. That would suck. That would be classic though if he got set down like right after lineups locked on like Monday or something like that.
It'll happen. You can bank on that. Quick note before we move on, baseball fans. This read is outdated, so we'll move on for now. James, what else are you seeing at the big league level right now that has opened your eyes a little bit?
I mean, I think Colin Moran looks pretty good in Pittsburgh, which is good to see. I don't know what to make of the power long term or even short term, but I think he's going to hit for a high enough average that'll be a net positive for your fantasy team, and he's playing a lot. So I like that. Jordan Hicks looks pretty good, but
yeah, it does.
I don't think he's going to be getting saves. I think that that he's kind of in their sort of Josh Hader, Chad Green type of role where he's just dominant in and he can go get you 4 or 5 outs. So I get rostering him, but I don't think he's really in that mix for saves just yet.
Could be until Hollins. I forget when Hollins will be inactivated, but Leon blew that save. I don't think it's out of the question. Like in the immediate future.
Yeah, I mean, I think that. Yeah, I mean, they have Tyler Lyons though too. I just wouldn't bet on it being Hicks right away. He's got the stuff to close. There's no doubt about that. It's just, would you rather him be closing or would you rather him be getting more than 3 outs earlier in the game in high leverage spots? I think that's probably more appealing right now.
I got him in the third round of the staff keeper league auction. Just couldn't pass him up there just because of the long term, the possibility that long term he is a closer and maybe a dominant one.
Oh yeah, it's a totally different calculus in dynasty leagues, keeper leagues, because I think you're right. I that prediction I made before the year about him having the highest ADP of any Cardinals reliever next year, I think is on track to look pretty good. I think that's definitely where this is headed. I just don't know if it's headed there quite yet. And on a related note, don't panic if you have AJ Minter and are worried that he hasn't struck anyone out through 3 innings. It's 3 innings.
Okay, yeah, that's a good call. I was getting a little nervous about David Robertson because he didn't have a strikeout yet either, but it is 3 innings, and it's cold. The Yankees have been playing pretty much nonstop in the cold, so we'll see. But Jordan Hicks versus Robertson, that was a real exciting either or, but just for single season leagues.
I'll go Hicks.
Yeah? Okay.
I
like those middle relievers. You know, they're pretty valuable, but you have to limit yourself. You can't have 5 middle relievers on your team.
That's my That's my current recipe right now in in SKL3.
It'll pay off.
It's just like where do you see, like, in say 3 years, what do you think is going to be the ideal makeup of a fantasy pitching staff? Because right now I think it's kind of like you want six starters, maybe two closers and one middle reliever.
Yeah, I'd say probably two middle relievers, two closers.
Five starters.
Yeah, five starters.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I'm at in one league right now, and it's a little too early in the game for
you're
that.
You're out ahead of the curve. That might be.
I just don't think you can compete in wins like that.
Well, maybe not, but what you can do is maybe over the first 2 months, just build yourself up a great ratios base and then get in a little bit more. Maybe, I think this is a possibility. Maybe the commissioner's office decides to change the baseball back, and then when they run out of the new ones around midseason, then you go streaming because the environment will be less favorable for hitters.
Why would they change it back, though?
Because it's getting ridiculous. I mean, it's fun. I mean, everybody likes the long ball. It's actually probably good for the game, but, I mean, they're putting up historical totals right now, and everything's kind of getting thrown out of whack.
One guy I got asked about who I hadn't really paid any mind to, but he's off to a heck of a start, is Preston Tucker. Not a prospect coming into the year, but he exhausted that status with Houston back in 2016. But do you think Preston Tucker, once Acuna's up, could press a guy like Nick Markakis for playing time and be useful in mixed leagues? Or do you think this is just a hot start that's going to fizzle out?
I'd lean toward the latter. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a big difference maker in the end. Maybe, but I think Nick Markakis is not exciting, but he's pretty consistent. When Acuna comes up, he won't have to be in such a prominent run-producing type of role. Probably a better fit being kind of the fire starter in the second half of that order. So certainly not out of the question. You probably want to hold for now, but I do think he's probably a guy you're going to be dropping come mid to late May. Myself, but I do finally have this read. I finally found the right one. With baseball season comes FanDuel, offering the most exciting ways to play fantasy baseball no matter what you're looking for. FanDuel, the excitement of fantasy baseball without the full season grind, something for everyone. Tons of different contests and formats to choose from, starting at just 25 cents. Pick a contest, choose your team, and enjoy watching your results in real time. James, you took down the RotoWire contest yesterday. Nice work there. The free roll. And you listeners, you can be part of the FanDuel RotoWire Baseball Championship as well. We have six qualifying contests between 4-4 and 6-13. Top three scores count. Place in the top 25, and you'll reach the RotoWire Championship. Get your shot at taking down Mean Zine, one of the better DFS players in the office, actually. And a lot of different variations, smaller rosters, AL, NL only, etc. Truly something for everybody. Play against your friends for bragging rights or play against the public for millions in cash prizes. To take advantage of our special offer for new users, sign up today at FanDuel.com/RW. You'll get a free six-month RotoWire subscription, which will help give you all the tools you need to be successful with your first deposit on FanDuel. Just visit FanDuel.com/RW. Void where prohibited. Just want to ask you about one more player. You mentioned Preston Tucker being a former Stro. I want to ask you about a current Stro and Derek Fisher, because he's getting a lot of run right now, but how long do you see that lasting? Looks pretty good.
I like Derek Fisher. I think that he's kind of a forgotten man in certain circles, but if he was still prospect eligible, I'd probably have him in the top 20. I think he's about as good a prospect as Lewis Brinson is, and it's just a matter of, can he hit long enough, or can he hit over a long enough stretch to kind of fend off a guy like Kyle Tucker, who's definitely coming at some point. He's striking out a lot, so that's not great, but definitely if you have a guy like Derek Fisher, he's not someone I'm cutting loose. I think he's out there in my RotoWire Online Championship League, which is a 12-teamer. That's that's kind of iffy. I might leave him out there in that format, but in a 15 teamer, I think he absolutely has to be owned just because he's got so much upside in the power and speed department.
Well, great stuff, James. We appreciate the insight. Time to kick off the list. My list, still shaking off the rust, still trying to get at bats, but I'm ready to unveil number 20. What about you?
Yeah, I think this will be a good one.
Yeah, and I think we both have Wu features kicking off our top 20 collabs, and that may be a common common theme throughout both lists. I have
just guys from Wu-Tang Clan hopping on other tracks and that making the cut. I was expecting that to be I expect there to be, you know, over under, I would put it at like 9.5 of your songs are going to have some sort of a Wu presence.
Yes, very heavy Wu presence. Look, you get a Wu member.
You get a Wu member on a track.
You get a non-Donna Wu member on a track. It's going to up that track. Like, I mean, if it's a 40-grade track, you got a Wu member, it's plus 10. Just yeah, automatically.
I think that's... I mean, that might even be a conservative estimate.
Yeah, I'd agree. So my choice is Skewed on the Barbie with Outkast featuring Raekwon. A really nice mix of two worlds. You know, you got the East Coast a flavor with Raekwon combined with that Southern Catalyst, what's the name of that album? Southern Playlistic Cadillac Music.
Southern Cadillac Playlistic Funky Music or something like that.
Yeah, right. That was a hell of an album, too. By the way, I've heard that Outkast practice their raps on a treadmill, so they could say them so quick, which is understandable because they're both really fast, really good. And this one, Skewed on the Barbie from the Aquemini album, such a good song top to bottom. The Raekwon verse, oh, man, just so, so good. I really don't know. I have a whole lot to add aside from if you haven't seen the video, go check that out. I know that's on YouTube. Play this in the ride on a road trip sometime. Turn it up because this one still bangs, really holds up today. Could have been higher on the list, maybe. But I thought, you know, I knew this was making the list. I still have some moving parts up in the top 10. Knew it wasn't going to quite crack the top 10. So I'm fine settling it here, knowing that it does make the list. But couldn't budge it up any higher.
Who do you think has the best verse on that track?
You know, I love the first one. I'm not going to say the opening line, but I love that first Andre 3000 line. But that the Ray verse, I mean, it's just so classic Ray. I think this was... Yeah,
it's very classic Ray.
Yeah, I think this was maybe when Ray was at his peak, quite honestly.
Yeah, that's... You know, not going to spoil. Well, I am going to spoil. So, I mean, that track is going to make my top 20. It's not right here, but that was actually one of the songs I was listening to when I came up with the idea of us doing a top 20 collabs. Mm-hmm. Just because it was such a great pairing of getting one of the best guys from Wu-Tang on a Outkast track back in both artists' peak. Yeah, hell of a track.
You know, the East Coast Southern doesn't always mix that well.
No.
Like Ray had an out. I actually kind of like the song, but it's not like a classic like I might think it would be in like 2005 or something. But Ray had a Lil Wayne feature on his latest album.
Something, it's, to me,
it doesn't click.
To me, something about Outkast, though, it's not like your standard Southern sound. It's kind of, Outkast is kind of just its own sound. It's not necessarily... And this is probably even more true when you get to like Aquemini and Stankonia, where it's technically Southern, but it's Outkast. It's not necessarily Southern, so that's probably why it works so well. So my Wu-Tang feature is all East Coast. It's Gangstar featuring Inspecta Deck, Above the Clouds off of the Moment of Truth album, classic album.
Yeah, that'll be on my list as well.
This is, it's kind of a weird feature in that it doesn't feel like a feature. Like it feels like Inspecta Deck could just be part of Gangstar the way that it just kind of flows together. Like a lot of, one thing I was thinking about just with hip hop features is like, what's the best type of feature? Is it one where, you know, you sort of have a back and forth? Is it one where you have like five guys on a track and everyone gets their own verse? Like, this one doesn't even feel like a feature to me. It just kind of feels like it was just meant to be, like Inspector Deck had to be on this track.
And yeah, it's like DJ Premier, like, started rap.
And this is such a, like, DJ Premier's beat style is very, you can pick it out right away, like when it's a primo track, but this one specifically seems like it needed a Wu presence. Like it's sort of a RZA-esque beat almost, but it's Premier, but like it definitely could have fit in perfectly on a Wu-Tang album. Like, it doesn't feel like a super, super like gangstar beat that Inspector Deck just happened to come in on. It's a beat that needed a Wu-Tang member. And that's why I think it just flows perfectly. One of the better Inspector Deck verses. Guru obviously crushes it.
Yeah, I love that song. Love the JFK intro to that. Kind of a poignant quote from him to start that. And then, yeah, it's really not a low point on that track. And I'm not, you know, as much as I love the Wu-Tang Inspector, not one of my favorites. His solo work was not that impressive, but no. He's kind of...
He'll have an amazing verse every now and then.
He can have some really good featured verses, yeah.
Like, he's got... Is it Triumph where he might have the best verse?
That first verse, yeah, that's insane.
I mean, he can bring it, but I mean, you're right. Like, his solo stuff doesn't stack up with the top guys from Wu-Tang, but I mean, he closes out this track really well. I would recommend not only listening to Above the Clouds, but just that whole Moment of Truth album. It bangs from top to bottom. And that was probably peak Gangstar and probably peak Inspector Deck.
This select line from this Ray verse from Skewed on the Barbie: keep a watch froze, lean on the yacht, and wash clothes. I like it. That first line, though: deliver this through your audio, ghetto mafioso. So good. If you haven't heard them, shame on you. Go check out both of these tracks. We'll be back with the number 19 songs on our list, or top 20 hip-hop collaborations of all time, next week. Thanks for listening to the Prospect Podcast, brought to you by FanDuel. Talk to you guys soon.